Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
We do what's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our hosts, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and Glenn Gilbo, the editor, and Andre Champagne, who is our producer here tonight. This is Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. We're here with you every Tuesday night on most of our affiliates. Some of our affiliates carry us on Wednesday or even over into Saturday. And then, of course, you can always listen to the show at on YouTube. And also, we are available wherever you get your podcasts. So look for Tiger Rag Radio, subscribe to it, and listen in as we try to give you the world of LSU in 2 hours every Tuesday night. Todd, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. And look, Glenn just is walking up. So I thought he had gone to Ole Miss, you know, to coach the Rebels.
He's following Charlie Weiss around?
Yeah, following Charlie Weiss around. But he's here right now. So
that's good.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good.
Compared to our last few weeks, Todd, this has been a relatively quiet time. I mean, we obviously had early signing period. I guess that's where we can start. Your thoughts on how that all shook out, the delayed signings of Richard Anderson and Lamar Brown, but yet you get them, some Ole Miss commits flip to LSU. Some other guys get processed out, like Kenny Darby, the wide receiver at Airline, Jalen Chapman, the offensive lineman from Warren Easton, who I believe ended up signing at Ole Miss.
You're right.
What'd you make out of that whole situation? Because that was a wild lead up to the early signing day, the first day of the early signing period, which was last Wednesday.
I thought it was a really good signing class for LSU. I thought it was quality over quantity. They got the number one defensive line class in the country. They had a composite average ranking of 93.81, so that means it was the best composite grade of any class in the country, not just the defensive line, but any class. So it's not just me being subjective that it was a good class. That was an actual analytical number that supports that. I thought that the staff came in, meaning Kiffin's staff, and, you know, completely evaluated the entire roster as to what they're going to be looking for in this class, how they're going to divvy up the funding, the revenue share, as well as the NIL, and decided who they wanted to, quote-unquote, purge and who they wanted to get in. I think that the delays that you referenced in the intro there were primarily because it involved commitments to a certain NIL package for those players, and I think that's what brought home the water on the last day.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of talk about who the defensive line coach is and who the defensive coordinator
is. There's still a lot of talk about who the defensive line coach is going to be.
Yeah, you're right about that. But I agree with you. I think that the biggest part of it is that you had a new general manager in, right? And so that NIL funding is going to get divvied up differently.
Yeah, yeah. They just the Kiffin staff's idea of what the roster should look like is understandably different than what Brian Kelly and his staff thought it was going to look like. And so that's, I think, where the delays, the changes, and the differences occurred.
Yeah.
Well, this was fun.
Excuse me, Jeff. I wanted to ask Andre.
Who's Andre?
Luke. Andre, of the commitments that LSU did not sign, how many of them did they want? Because there was a couple of players that they asked, they told the players, look, you don't have a scholarship here anymore. As Todd said, they purged them. So of the commitments going into signing day that LSU did not sign, I know there was one or two that they wanted, but which ones did they definitely want that they didn't sign?
Yeah, they definitely wanted Dylan Perter, who was the four-star safety out of Tuskegee, Alabama. He was, I believe, the fifth player in the state of Alabama, and he was committed to LSU for a while, and I actually spoke to him pretty recently leading into signing day, and his plan was to sign with LSU until defensive coordinator Blake Baker started to interview for the Tulane job, and that's where he kind of became uncertain about the future of what that LSU defensive staff was going to look like.
And he went to Florida.
He went to Florida, yeah. Right. And he actually had a really good he took several trips to Tulane with John Summerall, so he already had a pretty good relationship with Summerall.
Is that the only one, Andre?
That was about the only one that I can recall. I know they forced three-star Jalen Chapman out. I know Bryson Cooley was the four-star offensive tackle they probably did want him.
Yeah, they wanted him. So that's two.
He went to Alabama.
Yeah, like
they wanted him.
But he was a guy that was he kind of went ghost on LSU for a while. He hadn't really. I don't think he took one visit.
But they still wanted
entire,
him.
Yeah, but they still wanted him.
So, I hope I'm not out of line here, but you did a complete breakdown on TigerRag.com of the recruiting class and sort of did a forward look to what they would look for in the transfer portal based on position groups. Can you just summarize that really quickly?
Yeah, LSU needs to hit the ground running at quarterback, especially. LSU's, that's the biggest question that Todd and I were talking about yesterday. LSU will not really have a quarterback. Sure, they have Michael Van Buren, but I don't believe he's going to be the starter for LSU. They're going to bring in somebody that's one of the top guys in the transfer portal come January.
And with Colin Hurley AWOL, right.
they'll probably bring in two.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Lane has at times brought in two. Yeah, and he's at times had the two best quarterbacks in the league or close to it. So, and he's had quarterbacks waiting in the wings. And, you know, there was a good recruit at one time, Walker Howard, who finally left because they had so many good quarterbacks. But, I'm anticipating him bringing in some guys, maybe both high school and portal.
And they didn't bring in anybody at linebacker on defense.
Right.
And offensive line. I mean, obviously, God knows that offensive line needs help, right?
Right, and then, like you said, the linebacker position, they didn't fill anybody initially, but they're going to go in the transfer portal, and there's going to be some guys that they go for. Not right now, there's really not too many out there, but they also they're probably going to return Whit Weeks, if I had to guess. Then they're also going to bring back Devon Keys. They're going to bring back Tylan Singleton. That's a big – all three of those guys have played major snaps.
And hopefully Charlie Weiss Jr. and the other offensive staff members at Ole Miss, wink, wink, are recruiting Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback who's trying to petition to get another senior year. That would be really cool if they could bring him in.
That would be good. It would be good. Yep. But there's also, you mentioned Whit Weeks a minute ago, and Frank Wilson addressed that today in his Texas Bowl press conference. Boy, was that a bland listening.
Actually, it was. I thought it was pretty interesting.
I think what was not said was more telling than what was said, meaning Frank Wilson not divulging what will happen to him.
That's because he doesn't know, and he talked about
or
that.
Maybe he has been told, and he's not going to be part of the staff.
Yeah, that's true.
Frank is as loyal as anyone would come, and it's not like he's just going to bolt out the door. He'll do what he's got to do, but
are you a conspiracy theorist by nature?
I think he's got a chance to stay. I really do. Yeah. I mean, he might not stay as a coach. You know, but I think he's got a chance to stay. And you know, they better take care of him. I mean, if they don't bring him back, they need to give him a nice package, walking away money. You know, he'll probably. But, I mean, he'll get another job.
They might as well. The money appears to grow on trees around here. So you know.
Well, that and the fact that Whit Weeks kind of was again, what wasn't said was, I think, more telling about what might occur. It was a very short, quick answer on Whit Weeks, but it didn't sound like he could be. It sounded more like he's maybe leaning towards going.
Are you reading tea leaves?
Okay,
again?
So I am reading tea. I mean, because you know what? For the last 5 weeks, we've been reading body language here.
Okay, so what he said was, and I paraphrase, he basically said, "We've had conversations and no decisions have been reached.
Yeah,
we're
going to
have
mind.
Some more conversations."
Well, he didn't. I mean, I just felt
that's
Frank
what
was
he
very.
Said. That's,
I understand what he said, but I thought he was also being very careful with what he was saying.
I don't know. I didn't read that. I think you know, these Witt's got some options. I mean, obviously, if he stays in college football, I don't think it's a reach to say he's going to stay at LSU.
Yeah, because he wants to play for his father-in-law.
Well, even if they don't get married, it'd be pretty cool for them to be in the same town, if that's the case. Or maybe she's staying in Ole Miss and he'll transfer to Ole Miss. But or you know, he could go pro. But I doubt if he go pro, because he needs to have a nice healthy year for the draft. So I would say right now, I'll bet you a bottle of eggnog that he stays at LSU.
I thought eggnog came in cartons. I thought eggnog came in cartons.
Right, it does. But in the cartons are bottles.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's a meaningless bowl game, but why wouldn't he play in a bowl game?
Because he's hurt.
Because it's meaningless, he's not playing in it.
Well, I get that.
And he broke his foot
at that same venue a year ago.
It's a scrimmage, man. Lane's not going. I'm not going.
Well, Lane will be there.
Yeah, he'll be there, but he's not. I mean, I think it's really smart. I mean, and more coaches are doing it. I mean, all of Lane's attention right now, I would imagine, is on the portal, you know, and recruiting. That's what he's doing. He's figuring out what he needs and who's getting in the portal.
What he's doing right now is he's trying to get a defensive line coach.
Yeah.
And he's battling with Matt Rhule of Nebraska, is what everybody's saying. And I thought the guy was here on the weekend. And
Elijah Robinson.
Yeah, I thought he was here on the weekend, and I thought it was a pretty much of a done deal. And I think everybody pretty much thought it was a done deal. But now it appears, if you buy into the latest tea leaves, that he's headed to Nebraska.
Well, he's he came to LSU. He was at LSU. He interviewed, and then maybe something happened after that. But you know, Lane is really good at hiring coaches, so. I feel like he's gonna. If he doesn't get Elijah, he'll get somebody
Coach O.
Good.
Coach
maybe Coach O. You know, they say don't work with your friends. You know, so I don't know. I don't know if he'll want
and Coach O. Would know. Coach O. Would know.
But you know, he's hired some very good coaches, and I think he'll have an excellent staff. I just don't know who it will be yet.
All right, we have hit our first break of the show. We'll take it, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We'll go into some other things that Frank Wilson had to say today, and also look ahead to other topics. Ryan McGee from ESPN, SEC Network, he will join us later on in the hour. We're going to talk some women's basketball as well. Lady Tigers continue to score 100 points pretty much every time they're out there. Reed Darcy will join us. We'll also hear from Glenn West from 247 Sports. So a lot to get to here on Tiger Rag Radio. So let's take our first break, and we'll have more from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio after this.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.
My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Yeah, from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, Jeff Palermo along with Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn from Tiger Rag. So story up at TigerRag.com talking about Lane Kiffin allowing his assistant coaches that he just brought from Ole Miss to Baton Rouge, allowing them on the offensive side to go back and help the Rebels game plan for the game against Tulane and obviously the postseason run that Ole Miss is on. What do you make out of this arrangement? And, Glenn, you brought up a point that the way it was written in their contracts, I guess, and maybe I might be reading a little bit too much into this, but
You've been reading tea leaves all night, Jeff. I mean, go ahead. Keep going, man. You're reading my story now. That's all tea leaves.
That there wasn't an agreement. It's there in writing, right? That allows them to go.
Yes. Yes. 300% of their first year salary they would owe Ole Miss if they leave before March.
LSU.
That they would owe LSU, yes. If they tried to stay at Ole Miss, like if Charlie Weiss Jr., who's he would owe like $5 million because he's got like a $1.9 million salary. So that was some real smart accounting. Whoever did that at LSU or whoever saw that it was done, like Verge Osbury. So that's pretty cool. So and I think it's great that those guys get to go back. And I think Ole Miss is finally seeing things clearly, and not being as immature as they have been, and realizing that this is a national championship is rare. You know, you got to go all out for it, especially
if you live in Oxford.
Yeah, right. And you know, they haven't been in this close since 1960. And your best chance of winning is with Lane Kiffin coaching, and the second best chance is with all of his offensive staff and all of his defensive staff. So I think it's great that LSU is doing that. Like Verge said, you know, had Lane gone and coached Ole Miss, and it's true now, whatever Ole Miss does, it's good PR for LSU because that staff is coming back.
It is. And what do you think of this matchup between Ole Miss and Tulane?
I personally don't think Tulane should be in the playoffs, but are we going to go down that road? I don't even understand what this college football playoff committee does. I mean, they might as well just disband and go back to the computers for the BCS. This is a bunch of bunk. I mean, James Madison and Tulane. Tulane who got beat 45-10. Now, watch them turn around and whip Ole Miss in a couple of weeks. I doubt that's going to happen, and they do not I know there's a lot of Tulane fans that are probably aren't listening. Tulane fans probably aren't, but there are a lot of Tulane fans in New Orleans especially, and they don't deserve to be in the playoff. They should, the group of five, that whole thing should not happen. They should have their own playoffs. They should play, you know, they should separate this. This is bunk.
Well, I see what they're trying to do, and I think, you know, Tulane's in there because they won a championship game that was selected going in as the team, the champion gets to go. But that's risky because, you know, sometimes you can have bad teams get into the championship. James Madison should definitely not be in.
Let me ask you a question.
But my point is, I think there's some teams in certain years that – they should get in.
Let me ask you a question.
But I agree with you this year.
Okay. I know. Let's look at it. No, would BYU clock Tulane? Probably so.
I don't think so.
Would Notre Dame clock Tulane?
Probably so. I think Notre Dame would clock Tulane.
What about Vanderbilt?
But again, that's not really the point. They're trying to be like the NCAA tournament, because there's a lot of teams that get in the NCAA tournament that on the day of the tournament starts, you could say, would they clock this 500 team in the ACC? They'd probably get killed by them. But that's part of the magic of the NCAA tournament, and that's what they're trying to do. But I don't think it translates to football.
It doesn't, because there's only 12 instead of 72 or whatever, 68, whatever the number is.
That and in basketball, you can have a bad night shooting or another team can have a hot night shooting. In football, the game is played or won most of the time, 95% of the time, in the trenches. And Georgia,
it's going to happen, and, though. That's going to be upset.
Well, you have the classic example of back in the BCS era when you had, and this was before you had all these opt-outs, where you had Boise State beat Oklahoma one year. And I think a lot of these group of five schools hang on to that game as, hey, this is the example of a group of five school that can beat one of the major powers.
Well, you have an example from 2 years ago when Tulane beat USC.
But again, there were a lot of opt-outs in that game for USC.
Yeah, but the whole point of the college football playoffs was originally, especially when they expanded it to 12, last year, was supposed to be, in theory, the 12 best teams. And this whole thing about trying to replicate the NCAA tournament is just not.
Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to be like Little League when you let everybody play. You know, there's a rule where all the kids have to play. So it's like they're trying to be sweet or liberal or politically correct. Let's get the little guys in. Yeah, that's neat.
Well, and I think the organizers of this never thought the ACC would be weakened like they have been, right? I mean, because you don't have you don't have the ACC conference champion in the 12-team playoff.
That's another stupid
thing. They ought to get rid of all the conference championship games is the best thing that you could do, and then you're not stuck with bad teams in there, and then just pick the 12 best when it's over and don't have that stupid show during the season.
There's a lot of stupid going on.
You're damn
all right, we'll take a break. Ryan McGee from the SEC Network, ESPN, will join us when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Back inside the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, Jeff Palermo, along with Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn of Tiger Rag Magazine, and it's a pleasure to have our first guest on our show here tonight, and that is the great Ryan McGee, of course, of ESPN, the SEC Network, of course, co-host of Marty and McGee. And Ryan, thanks a lot for your time tonight. How you doing?
My wife was laughing at me because I was like, man, the SEC championship's done. We kind of get a little time off, and she goes, there's no such thing as time off. She goes, how do you not know this? And I said, yeah, but it's good. It is crazy to think that the regular season is done, but man, there's certainly been plenty to talk about since then.
What is your thoughts on, or maybe I'll phrase the question a different way here. Obviously, the biggest debate here over the last couple of days is the college football playoff. If you had an opportunity, Ryan, to make one or two fixes to this whole thing, what would they be?
Well, I think we have a room full of people who are making decisions. Glenn, I don't know if you've ever participated in one of these mock selection committee things. I've done it four or five times. And, we go to Grapevine, Texas, and we sit in the room, and we go through the whole process. And what's interesting is how the room changes and how that affects the rankings. Like, I've done that with a room full of sports writers, and I've done it with a room full of former coaches, and I've done it with a room full of players who turned into analysts, and I did it with a room full of play-by-play guys. And their approach as a group was completely different. And so I just think if we're going to have human beings sitting in a room and voting on these things, then we're going to get some goofy stuff. And I also think that it doesn't matter if we're at four teams or 12 teams or 16 teams, the last one left out is going to be really, really mad. And I've said this to Notre Dame fans all day long. A, ESPN has nothing to do with it. Like, Heather Dinich isn't even allowed to sit, not even in the room with the committee. She can't sit in the room That's the waiting room next to the committee's room. Like, she has to go down the hallway. We have nothing to do with it. And the other thing is, beat Miami. You know, you played two teams that are in the playoff, and Texas A&M and Miami lost both of them. So I just, if you take care of your business on the field, like Clark Lee said about Vanderbilt, then you probably don't have that much of a complaint. But I get it. Alabama's in it, and they got three losses, and people are up in arms. But the eye test, I think that's what the committee went with, and I think there will probably be some sort of subtle changes to the way they do things, but probably not as much as everyone in South Bend wants to have.
Ryan, this is Todd. What's your opinion about this awarding the group of five automatic qualifiers and giving them equal weight, so to speak, with the big boys?
It doesn't bother me. I think that, you know, I grew up on kind of next level down campuses, right? I mean, I grew up on FCS campuses and Division II campuses. And so I'm not naive enough to think that the whole thing should be, just open the door for everybody and it's ever going to be weighted toward the group of five or whatever. But I think they should be given a chance. And I think that right now, if we really want to worry about the health of college football overall, then you know what? Troy State and Coastal Carolina and San Jose State, they need to be able to recruit on. If we catch a heater, we could make the playoff. And I remember when they first started talking about expanding the playoff, I was down at Coastal Carolina, and Jamie Chadwell, who's at Liberty now, and Jamie looked at me and he goes, just the ability to walk into a living room and say, if you come to school here, yes, you might be in the playoff. I think there has to be a seat at the table. I mean, I think there has to be. And now what's important is those teams have to take care of business, right? Boise has to win games, and Tulane needs to win games, and they need to represent just like they had to represent, you know, when they were given, you know, throw them a one bone, you know, the one seat in the New Year's Six bowl game. So I want them to be able to continue to build programs, and the only way that's going to happen is they have to be included. And if they're not, then they should just go do their own thing.
Well, I don't think this is – you may agree with this, you may disagree with this. I don't think they should be excluded, but I think it should really be the top 12, if it's a 12-team playoff, or the top 16. And Tulane is the top-seeded group of five team this year, and they are not in the top 12. They just aren't. So they're not one of the 12 best teams in the country. So why are they afforded a playoff bid? They're not excluded. If they had not lost badly to Ole Miss and if they had not lost badly to UTSA, then maybe they would be in the top 12. But they did. And so just like Vanderbilt, Clark Lee said, you didn't take care of it on the field. Why does Tulane get charity?
Well, but it's the only charity case there is. You know, like I say, I don't mind it. And when we go to 16, and that's happening, when we go to 16, I don't think it will have quite the impact. But, you know, I mean, like Boise a year ago, they played their way in. There wasn't any debate about it. And this year is different because you're right. It's a team that was not ranked in the top 12, and they're there. But that being said, I'm also a sports writer, and it's a pretty good story. And it's a rematch, and they've got a chance to – with everything that's going on in Oxford, they have a chance to go in there and make a little noise. And that's what they have to do. I remember talking to June Jones about that at Hawaii. I remember Hawaii had that record-breaking season and set all his passing records, and then they went to the Sugar Bowl and got embarrassed. And he always took that personally because he felt like he was representing, you know, all these group of five programs. And so, you know, if you're Tulane, no pressure, but you're kind of setting the tone for whatever this is going to be going forward.
Hey, Ryan, I want to switch subjects here a little bit. I want to ask you a Marty question.
Yeah.
I remember when I first saw him on ESPN, he came in covering NASCAR, right? That was his the first thing he did. Yeah. Did his coverage of NASCAR enable him to drive well enough to get that Lane Kiffin interview in what looked like a prison at the airport?
Yeah, it was. And what's funny is that, so Marty, he had to literally get up and leave his Thanksgiving dinner and go to the Egg Bowl because they decided we need you to be embedded, you know, and following this Lane Kiffin story. And then, so he flies into Birmingham because he's got to go to Starkville. And the only vehicle they had on Thanksgiving evening at 7 o'clock or whatever was this sketchy-looking van. And Marty texted me, and he goes, they have given me this damn van. He goes, I look like a creep driving across Mississippi at night. And what was funny was, it's, at one point, it was Marty and Mark Schlabaugh and I think Pete Thamel. And they're in this creeper van driving around Tupelo. And I told him, I said, y'all need to write you need to call all of Marty's buddies in the country music business to get them to write a song about this. So it was one day, when the Marty McGee radio show returns after the college football season is over with, I have made Marty promise me that we might spend the whole 3 hours.
Oh, yes. That would be
great. Going back over the whole thing. In fact, on Saturday when we did Marty McGee at the SEC Championship, our whole thing at the beginning was we made it look like Marty was still in Oxford. We had him standing in front of a backdrop, and then I started yelling, "Free Marty!" And he got off. It turned out he was on the bus and in Atlanta. I said, yeah, he's been a good sport about it. But I can tell you this, when we were doing the selection, the CFP selection show on Sunday, and they were divvying out assignments, Marty goes, I don't care where you send me, but you sure as hell not going to send me back to Oxford.
Well, you're on the outside looking in, but you know LSU and you know the SEC. What do you think Lane Kiffin will do at LSU, and what do you think of the hire?
Well, I think he'll win because, I mean, you guys, I don't have to tell you all this. What he accomplished at Ole Miss was a miracle. And there's this kind of Ole Miss is such a great place to watch a game, and they've got some history, but it's really distant history. And it's one of those places that shocks you when you go into Vaught Hemingway. I mean, you guys know this. And you see the years, like up on the stadium of former championships, and they have nothing since the 60s. And they got one co-division championship, SEC West championship, when Eli and David Cutcliffe were there. And that's it. And for him to win double-digit games, basically what, out of the last, almost every year out of the last 6 years, it's stunning what he did. And he turned it into, it really was a miracle. And
hey, so, Ryan, excuse me. Can you stay with us through the commercial break? You got a few minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. I figured y'all might want to talk about this topic.
Hey, thank you. We ready to take a break, Andre?
Yeah, we're going to take a break here in the okay. Super Chevy dealer.
We'll be right back.
Tiger Rag Radio is back live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, we have Ryan McGee with us here with the SEC Network and ESPN. Take it away, Glenn.
So, Ryan, you think Lane will have an immediate effect at LSU as he tries to rebuild a bad offense, or you think it might take him a couple of years, or what are your thoughts?
No, I think that the days of slow ramp-ups are over, and how do you do that? You do it by taking care of business in a transfer portal, and, what he did so brilliantly at Ole Miss was he created this destination program you look at the quarterbacks that went through there. I mean, Jackson Dark grew up on the beach in California, and we ended up in Oxford, Mississippi. He and I used to joke all the time about him having learned how to eat again, by moving to Mississippi. And now – you have the brand name with LSU. You don't have to build that kind of thing. And so between the transfer portal, the money that we all know that he has been promised by the governor and everyone else, and his reputation for offense and putting guys in the league, I think it will happen very quickly. And if it doesn't, he's going to have to answer a lot of questions as to why not.
Brian, do you think that Lane Kiffin is that much better of a coach right now than Brian Kelly?
I think that Lane Kiffin is a better CEO of a college football program than he gets credit for. The reality is that, Lane's not been calling the plays. It's been Charlie Weiss Jr. and it's been these guys. And so what he has figured out that a lot of people do not is how to delegate, but then also how to coach when it's time to coach and when to pull that out. And, all these things that I've said, that the why Lane Kiffin has taken that job for the resources and the chance to win a championship. It's all the same reasons we gave for Brian Kelly coming out from Notre Dame. But I just think that Louisiana is its own thing. I mean, you guys know that better than anybody else. They teach entire classes at political science universities just about Louisiana politics. And so someone who can come in and handle the CEO part of the job, the football part of the job, but then also, more importantly, the political part of the job. I think Lane Kiffin has the capability to do all of those things, and Brian Kelly could hit on about probably, one out of the three.
Do you think that three, four, maybe 5 years from now, Lane Kiffin's going to leave LSU to go to Alabama or the NFL or some other destination?
I did an entire documentary about Lane Kiffin,
right,
which, by the way, we're reworking a little bit right now. And
that was a great show, by the way. Great show. Well,
thank you. Thank you. And we did that interview with him back in March of 2025, so what, 7-8 months ago. And all of the things that he said to me, I believed him. And I told everyone, I mean, screamed it from the mountaintop. So Marty McGee, Marty and I both did, that we didn't think he was going to go. We didn't think he would leave. So I say all of that to say, hell yeah, I think he'll leave one day. I don't think he's staying anywhere for any particular period of time. But what we do know, based on these last couple of head coaching jobs, not just Ole Miss, but also Florida Atlantic, which had never been great, he'll win when he's there. But when he decides it's time to go, he's going to go. And don't believe him if he tells you that he's not.
Don't you think he could like set a new goal, personal goal for himself, to win more national championships than Nick Saban, and get on a roll or a heater here in Baton Rouge and maybe stay for 7 to 10 years or something like that?
I mean, maybe. I mean, he's 50 years old now. So, you know, if you're going to stay 10 years, you're talking about 60. Sure. But I think that, again, everyone in Oxford did not believe he would leave. And he did. And I think he always says, well, I would have never left Tennessee, but it had to be USC. I would have never left Ole Miss, but it had to be LSU. And there's only one program left on that list, and that would be Alabama. So if Alabama comes calling one day, we'll send Marty down to Baton Rouge.
You think he'll ever go to the NFL?
I don't think so. One of the things I really took from him was that he disliked that Raiders experience so much, and it was so crazy. You know, the one allure to him is the fact that his father is one of the greatest assistant coaches in the history of the league. So maybe there's a chance there, but I would be surprised if he didn't just stay in college.
Ryan, who's your pick to win it all?
Well, I kept saying Ohio State, but Indiana, all they do is keep winning. Let's go Hoosiers until somebody proves otherwise.
Hey,
it's an
Ryan,
amazing story. Amazing
Ryan,
story.
Ryan, I got to tell you, I appreciate you answering me quick to do the show tonight, because I had actually asked Schlabaugh and Chris Lowe before you, and you answered before they did. So I had to audible. I told them both that they're bumped. So you were the man. They weren't.
I think Schlabaugh is still in that band at the Birmingham Airport.
He might be.
Ryan, happy holidays. Enjoy the college football playoffs. We appreciate your time tonight.
Hey, appreciate you guys always.
That's Ryan McGee from ESPN, the SEC Network. We'll take a break. One more segment to go in hour number one. We'll be back after this from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, Jeff Palermo along with Todd Horn and Glenn Gilbo. And LSU is playing in a bowl game. There's still one more game left here in the 2025 season, as they'll be playing in the Texas Bowl against the University, or yeah, is it UH or HU? I always get that one confused. University of Houston, the Cougars, as they'll see Willie Fritz, and who's now the head coach at University of Houston. Of course, he was the former head coach at Tulane. Casey Wegman is the starting quarterback. You can make the argument that it was the beginning of the end when Mike Elko pulled Casey Wegman for Marcel
Connor.
Reed.
Connor
Wegman. Thank you.
Yeah.
Connor Wegman. I knew that didn't sound right when I was saying it. Thank you, Todd. Connor Wegman, when they replaced Marcel Reed with Connor Wegman in that A&M game, it was never the same really after that. Here is what Coach Frank Wilson said about whether his team is going to be fired up to play in this game against the Houston Cougars on December 27th.
The experience for the student athlete is the ultimate of what you're trying to accomplish. And to take that from these young men was something we never actually put on the table. It's something that they wanted. It's something that we as a university wanted to do to complete a season and to send these seniors out the right way.
So good answer there by Frank Wilson, but obviously the excitement level is very low. I just wonder how much longer we're going to see these bowl games, especially when we're looking at, as Ryan McGee talked about, we're going to see the playoff expanded to 16. And then why is it going to stop there? I mean, eventually it'll go to 24, it'll go to 32. I don't see how these bowls can exist. I don't know how they make money to begin with. I honestly don't.
They make money by name sponsorships, that corporations that are just pouring tons of money in.
But why are they? Why are these corporations pouring? How are they getting any kind of this is not a business financial show. I get that. But what kind of return on investment are you getting on something
It's
they all get to be on ESPN when there's no other football. That's the one thing they do get for them.
But the other thing that they get, aside from national exposure on ESPN, is they get community awareness in Houston or in Tampa or wherever the bowl is, and they're tied into the philanthropy in those areas, and it just builds their community awareness. So it's really just a corporate play right now. And you said Frank did a good job answering that question. I don't even know what he said. Okay. All I know is that LSU started the year saying playoffs are bust, national championship are bust, and now they're 7-5 and they're going playing a Texas bowl game that about 15 people are going to be watching and caring about whatever. Nobody cares if LSU wins or loses that game aside from pride. My personal opinion, these bowls are over, and I have no qualms whatsoever with Notre Dame and anybody else just electing not to participate.
Yeah, I think, if they get to 32, like you said, Jeff, then they could use more and more of the bowls in the mix. I just hope that they quit adding bowls and maybe decrease some. There's too many. But, as they increase the playoffs, those bowls will have a role. But they're done.
How many losing teams are going to a bowl this year?
Yeah, they need them. They're looking for them. It's ridiculous.
I don't know if these minor bowls will participate in the 32-team playoff.
No, not all of them, but there are going to be some mid-level bowls that do.
I think they want to do the campus sites.
Round, they will.
All right, we got to take a break. Come back. We talk some women's hoops with Reed Darcy from the Advocates. So stay tuned for that.
Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
What's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, man.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. You get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council, Boudreaux's Electrical Services, Sunshine Quality Solutions, Super Chevy Dealers, and Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Yeah, this is Jeff Palermo from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, along with Todd Horn and Glenn Gilbo. Thanks for joining us. Hour number two of Tiger Rag Radio. Don't forget, you can catch the show on YouTube or wherever you get your favorite podcast, just look for Tiger Rag Radio. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, we will talk with Glenn West of 247 Sports. But now we talk a little women's basketball as we break away from the football talk, as the Lady Tigers, Coach Kim Mulkey's team, is a perfect 10-0. And in 9 of those games, they have scored 100 points or more. Now, who they did it against is not necessarily a very difficult slate of competition, but you got to give them credit. You score 100 points in 9 out of 10 games you played. That is saying something. And we bring in Reed Darcy, who covers LSU women's basketball for The Advocate. So, Reed, how does this translate to once they finally get into SEC play? I mean, how much of a juggernaut is this team, or is the competition been so low here, it's really tough to gauge?
It is very tough to gauge. It's tough to know for sure. But I think if you look at the past results and compare them to previous teams, you know, Kim Mulkey has always had a pretty light non-conference schedule since she's been at LSU. And, you know, for what it's worth, this team is dominating just a little bit more than they usually have in years past. They're scoring at a much higher rate. They're shooting at a much higher percentage. They're winning by larger margins. So I think that tells us that they're maybe a little bit better than some of those other teams. I don't know. It's tough to put some stock into overall the 15 or whatever games they play. I think you should really look at that game against Duke and really try to see exactly what this team is, because I think what we learned that night when they played Duke is that, yeah, the offense is legit. They're one of the best offensive teams in the country. Duke always has a good defense under Kara Lawson, and they really played well offensively. So I think all the offense, you know, all the numbers, 100 points, it shows us that the offense is legit. They're definitely one of the best in the country, maybe even the best.
Reed, you talked about the Duke game, and LSU fell behind 14-1 to a Duke team that had 3 losses coming in. If I'm not mistaken, it was 3 losses coming in and had not been playing well. And then they fell behind as far as 17-3 before they finally erupted. Was that Malaysia Fulwalla coming off the bench, or what happened? How did they finally wake up, and why were they asleep at the beginning?
It was definitely Fulwalla. She definitely came in and gave them a spark and really woke them up, I would say. You know, the reason why they got off to such a slow start, I think, you know, in the macro, you look at it, they probably needed a few minutes to adjust to Duke's size and skill and athleticism, because they haven't played a team like that all year. So I'd imagine it took a few possessions there to get accustomed to that, get used to that, get a feel for it. But if you just look at it on offense, they committed a lot of turnovers. There was a lot of careless mistakes. You know, Flashe dribbled the ball off her foot one time. Michaela Williams failed to pass out of bounds. Just overall sloppiness on offense. I believe they turned the ball over on 6 of their first 9 possessions. And then on defense, they weren't sharp in their rotations. They weren't getting back in transition. Those issues kind of appeared a little bit throughout the game, but they were really glaring, especially at the start of the first quarter. They fixed them. They cleaned them up. They got back into the game. A lot of it has to do, I think, with, you know, on offense, they just played a lot sharper. They started taking care of the ball a lot better, and that allowed them to run their offense and score their points the way they have all season. So, you know, what you learned is that, you know, they are this great offensive team, but I think they're also pretty resilient because they went on the road in, you know, kind of a difficult environment and fell down by 14 points early, took a big punch, and then responded right back. So that's a sign of a team that has quite a bit of competitive maturity on it, I would say.
So what are your big questions on this team at this stage, given who they've played, how badly they've beaten them, the fact that they're ranked now number 2 in the net rankings? They've scored more points than any other team has scored. I mean, you know, 9 of the 10 with 100-plus points, but even against Duke, they scored over 90. If I'm not mistaken, that's the only team that's ever scored that much through the first 10 games. What's the biggest – is it Fulwalla that's the biggest, I guess, you know, news? Or is it Kate Koval? Or is it the front line? What's the big thing that you're seeing right now?
The big thing that I'm seeing is just how well the pieces fit. All the new pieces seem to fit alongside each other really well. And that really hasn't been the case the past couple of years when, you know, they've had some trouble trying to figure out their point guard situation. They've had some undersized post players kind of playing a little bit out of position. They have to compensate for that quite a bit. It seems like to me that this team, all the pieces, the eight newcomers combined with the four or five returners, they all fit pretty well together. Jada Richard, I think, is playing really well at point guard, giving Kim Mulkey exactly what she needs. You know, you don't need a ton of offense from her, but you just need her to take care of the ball and keep the offense moving. And then when you look at combine her with Kate Koval, who's playing really well on the interior, she's 6'5" and really strong, and that's not something that LSU really had last year. So combining them and then Phil Wiley able to come off the bench and do mileage with Phil Wiley things, I think it's all come together into this awesome, really just productive group of players. Now, the questions I might have is, how exactly good are they on the defensive end of the floor? I'm not so sure. You know, Duke is not a very good offensive team, and they had one of their better offensive showings against LSU for what that's worth. And we haven't really seen any other kind of team that could test LSU defensively. So I'll look to see once, you know, SEC play starts, how well are they playing defensively? Can they meet Kim Mulkey's standards, and can that become another strength of theirs in addition to their offense?
Is there, Reed, is there any word on when Kaitlyn Gilbert's going to be back?
No, we do not know. We know she's away from the team for personal reasons. We do not know when she will be back. We should get some kind of update from Kim Mulkey. We're talking to her on Thursday ahead of their game against Louisiana Tech on Saturday, so maybe we'll get an update from her then.
Is that a negative right now for the team, just the fact that she's not there?
I actually, you know, think you can kind of spin it into a positive, because some of their younger players are getting more minutes than they would have gotten otherwise. You know, Bella Hines, Devine Burridge, those players maybe have a little more room in the rotation, more time to see the floor. Bella Hines got in a little bit against Duke. Maybe if Kaitlyn Gilbert were with the team and playing, maybe she wouldn't have gotten onto the floor and gotten that good experience so that she can use to help contribute to the team once January and February rolls around.
Hey, Reed, going into the season, Kim Mulkey kind of talked about losing Anissa Morrow and how she didn't have, you know, that one player that could just kind of dominate the stat sheet like she did. But she said that the team would have to play, you know, collectively down low. And what have you seen from those post players thus far? And do you think they're effectively replacing her production effectively?
I do, yeah. They're actually grabbing more rebounds per game than they did at this point last year. I think last year in the non-conference they were, you know, pulling down 47, 48 rebounds per game. This year it's just a tick over 50, 52 or something like that. So they're actually rebounding the ball a little bit better against their non-conference competition than they did last year when they had Anissa Morrow. So that's pretty impressive to me. And it's not really one player who's taken it upon themselves to handle all of the rebounding duties like Anissa Morrow did. I think the leading rebounder is Koval, and she's only averaging about 7.5 rebounds a game. It really has been a collective effort. All the guards have rebounded really well, from Flaje and Michaela to some of the younger ones like Bella Hines and those players there. So it really has been a collective. They are rebounding just fine. I thought it might have been a small issue that they had to deal with this year, but through the first 10 games or so, it has not been a problem whatsoever. In fact, it's looked a little bit better than it did last year, which is pretty impressive.
Reed, do you think that when SEC play starts in January, obviously some of these players are going to have reduced playing time. She's going to narrow it down to, what, probably 8 or 9, knowing the way she usually does that are in a rotation. And is Grace Knox going to be able to sustain as a freshman?
Yes, I do. I definitely think Grace Knox will be in that rotation of 8 or 9. She's playing really well. She's been super efficient around the rim. She's defending really well as well. Kim Mulkey said after we talked to her after they beat UNO on Sunday, she said she thought Sakaya Johnson, she said she thought things were moving a little bit too fast for her against Duke, and so she didn't play as much against Duke than maybe we would have thought she would. But I think those two freshmen are definitely going to be in that rotation of 8 or 9 with Knox coming off the bench. She's just too good of a defender and a rebounder, and LSU really needs that kind of player on the inside, especially when you factor in what she can do in transition as well. So I think in the past, Mulkey really has gone after maybe 7 or 8 in her rotation. It's kind of been pretty small, pretty tight. This year, I'm expecting it to be a little bit looser, a little bit bigger. Maybe she has 8, 9. Maybe you can even squeeze in a 10th there. It all depends how the games go. But I really do think that this team is a lot deeper than it has been in years past. And she's got, you know, just more weapons at her disposal. I think, you know, there's just a lot of talent on this team. And she's really using these first 15 games of the season to figure out exactly what she has and just, you know, find exactly what this team's capable of. And I think she's pretty pleased with the results so far.
Have you had a chance to really scope out some of the other teams in the SEC and sort of gauge them and, you know, and compare them to LSU? And if so, where do you think LSU's falling really truthfully in the conference right now, in the conference race?
Yeah, so right now I would say that LSU is the third best team in the conference just because we haven't seen them play the level of competition that Texas and South Carolina is playing. Those three teams, I look at them pretty similarly. South Carolina this year, if you look at their starting five, they probably have the best starting five or one of the best starting fives top to bottom in the country. You know, there are really no weak points there. They're really good. But, you know, the Dawn Staley teams, they're usually like come at you in waves where they bring off, you know, 4 or 5 players off the bench and there's no drop off. This year, I think they might have a bit of trouble doing the same thing. It doesn't look like they have quite the depth that they have in years past. So LSU might be able to, you know, make a run at them this year. I think Texas is off to a really good start. They've arguably have the best resume so far in the country. They beat UCLA and South Carolina, which is really impressive. They're one of the best defensive teams in the country. They're playing really well on their point guard, Rory Harmon. She tore her ACL 2 years ago. She came back last year, but now it looks like she's fully back to what she was before, and that's a dangerous sight for all the rest of the SEC teams that have to deal with her. It's really those three teams at the top of the conference. I wouldn't be surprised if any of them won the conference, but I think we'll look towards January and February to see exactly which one is the best and who's going to come out of it on top, I think.
Reed, thanks a lot for your time, man. We really appreciate it. Look forward to your coverage, along with the Tiger Rags coverage of the LSU's game against Louisiana Tech on Saturday in the Smoothie King Center. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Talk to you guys later.
All right, Reed Darcy from The Advocate talking about the Lady Tigers 10-0. They'll be taking on Louisiana Tech at the Smoothie King Center Saturday at 5 o'clock. Just 4 more non-conference games and then finally get into the nuts and bolts of this thing when they open up the SEC season on January 1st at home against Kentucky. We'll be back after this here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Jeff Palermo, along with Todd Horn and Glenn Gilbo. And again, if you're just joining us late here on Tiger Rag Radio, you can always re-listen, re-watch previous shows either on YouTube, check out Tiger Rag's YouTube channel, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. You can download and subscribe to get the latest edition of Tiger Rag Radio. Hey, a doubleheader inside.
Jeff. All the past shows are also available on TigerRag.com.
That is true. So. That is true. Yeah, you can go back to August and hear us talk about how LSU football is going to be in the college football playoffs and hear how stupid we were.
Jeff, you're fired.
Well, we were.
But not with cause. Oh, yeah, with cause. Oh, without cause. Oh, wait, I don't know. I'll just say both in the same sentence.
Actually, I don't have the authority to fire you.
Yeah. Oh, boy, those were the days, weren't they? we'll get back into a little more football talk here in a second. But since we're on the hoops, since we're talking a little hoops, a men and women doubleheader in the Smoothie King Center. LSU taking on Lady Texers, which is an interesting matchup by name only, right? Because we know where Kim Mulkey, where she played, where she was an assistant coach, where she left a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. We now know it's not the greatest relationship between her and her alma mater. And then you have an LSU men's basketball team that, they got punched in the face against Texas Tech, and they never really responded. A disappointing game in Fort Worth, but they got a chance to make up for it on Saturday in the Smoothie King Center when they take on an ACC opponent in SMU.
So what's the capacity crowd at the Smoothie King Center, roughly? I mean,
I think they can punch. I think they can get 16,000-17,000 in there if they wanted to.
And the women play first. I predict, based on what happened with the men at Texas Tech, that the women outdraw the men's game. I think there'll be more people at the women's game than there will be at the men's game. Even though it's a very important game for the men, arguably way more important than it is for the women, I still think the women will outdraw the men.
Well, for one, I also agree with you. And the capacity at the Smoothie King Center is 17,791. Now, there's going to be more fans for that women's game than there has been all year for the Pelicans games.
And the Pelicans are 3-22, right?
That is correct. So New Orleans should probably show out because this is the only good basketball they're going
to
see.
Yeah, and it's an interesting night to have the game. And I think the men are going to have a decent crowd because it's at 7:30. And, you know, there's no college football on TV this Saturday night for the first time in a while. So,
and it's an important game for them.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a Saturday night in December in New Orleans. You'll have some people out and go to the game, I think. I think both teams will draw well.
I also think they're going to draw a crowd from those who may be staying in for whether that's the Saints game on Sunday or whether that's the state championship playoffs that are going on this weekend. It is a big weekend in New Orleans. It's going to be crowded over there.
Yeah, that's true. It's going to be difficult because I think I think St. Augustine might be playing at about the time the LSU men play. Yeah. So it's going to be a traffic nightmare there.
The St. Augustine car game's at 3:30. There's only two games on Saturday because the LHSA has to get out of the dome to allow the NFL to – the NFL needs like 24 hours. Well, they request 24 hours, but they can't get 24 hours this time around. But anyways, you see what I'm saying. They got to get ready for the Saints game the next day. But what happened against Texas Tech?
Yeah, that really surprised me because, you know, I didn't think they were – you know, I wasn't surprised that they lost, but I was surprised at how they were never really – in the game. And, you know, Deedon Thomas was really trapped and just was not himself in that game. And that really shocked me. And that kind of set the tone for the rest of the team. And they were just never in the game. I didn't see that coming.
There's this feeling that it's, even though it's one game, same old, same old. They got a chance to – again, that's why this game against SMU is important because they – and frankly, I got to be honest with you. I don't know how good SMU is. I just know they're in a Power Four conference and they've had decent teams in the past.
I watched SMU play Saturday against Texas A&M, and they're a solid basketball team. And my opinion of this LSU men's basketball team really doesn't change much, and I'll tell you why. I think they're physically suited to really compete this year. And I think if they were to play Texas Tech 10 or 9 more times, they would beat them a few times and it would be a much closer game. I mean, Texas Tech basically took advantage of what LSU was doing against them, and that was trying to stop that all-star center that they have. And they were double-teaming him, which means they were leaving him open on the outside. And Texas Tech just made them pay. They hit 8 of their 9 first three-pointers, and they had a 27-point advantage from the three-point line. LSU just couldn't shoot Thomas, like Glenn said, couldn't do anything. But Eddie Sutton used to say, the former Arkansas and Kentucky coach, that you're going to play five games a year that you just aren't any good, well below yourself. You're going to play five games a year where you're much better than yourself, and the rest of the time you're going to be yourself. I think this was one of the games where LSU played much less than themselves, and I don't think it's going to be that way against SMU or moving forward. Maybe well, four more times.
Eddie should know because he lost by 40 to LSU in Rupp Arena.
All right, let's take a break. Glenn West from 247 Sports joins us here on Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Funtno, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back inside the Super Chevy Dealers Studio, Jeff Palermo along with Glenn Gilbo and Tiger and Todd Horn of Tiger Rag. And let's bring in our next guest here on the show, and that is Glenn West from 247 Sports. Glenn, happy holidays. How are you doing tonight?
We do not have Glenn West as of right now.
Oh, we're still efforting Glenn West as it is at the moment. So, okay. All right. Well,
we're going to discuss the basketball team and LSU's recruiting class. So why don't we talk about the LSU signing day last week, Andre, as we try to get Glenn. Todd, what did you think of the class as far as you were talking earlier? That was an awesome stat by Andre and by Luke. The rating per player, because they didn't have a lot of signees. They just had 14, but they were all really good. And they had that number one ranking.
Yeah, that's why I said earlier when we were talking about it, I think it was quality over quantity. And I really believe what was happening here is that, I think, Lane Kiffin has proven that he and his staff know how to evaluate their roster as a whole, what they're looking for. So I think he's looked at the entire current LSU roster. I think that he has looked at who they were recruiting, and I think he's got an eye on what's going to happen in the portal. And they know exactly not only who they want to invite from the portal, who they wanted to recruit, and who they want to retain on the LSU roster, and then how they want to spend that revenue share dollar and those NIL dollars that they're going to have. And he's going to have up to $25 million guaranteed by LSU. That was part of his contract agreement from NIL. And I think that that's what you saw going on here, and they're really going to build that roster the way that they wanted to, not the way that the previous staff had done it. And I think that was a lot of what was going on with that recruiting. I think they could have brought in 25 players if they wanted to, which would have been a normal recruiting class size for LSU in terms of quantity. But they were going for quality over quantity with a longer-term picture towards January 2nd. And we've already seen some attrition on the LSU, current LSU roster, and I don't think they've lost anybody except maybe Ahmad Bro that they would like to have, and I'm not even sure about that.
Ahmad is going to play in the bowl game, he said. Let me ask you, Todd and Jeff, Lane is busy with the portal and busy getting ready for the class in February, and he's looking at his team. And I don't understand why not coach the team in the bowl practices, or if not actually coach them and do what you usually do for a game, just be there to watch the players. And why not coach the team in the bowl, just as a dress rehearsal type thing? I don't really get that. What do you think of that?
I personally like it. okay? And I understand what you're saying, but I think that especially in today's, we've talked about this in the past, this is a transactional sport now, and I think he wants a clean break. This is this year's team. He starts, like it said at his introductory press conference, 2026. His number on his jersey, the Kiffin jersey, was 26. That's where his focus is, and that's where he wants the break. He doesn't want to be, and I'm putting words in his mouth here, but my sense is he doesn't want to be associated with the 2025 LSU Tigers.
Yeah, and I understood that when Kelly came in, because you remember they had mass exodus of players in the portal. You're not seeing that this time. And I thought Kelly didn't coach that bowl because I thought he might be embarrassed. He was afraid he might be embarrassed, which they almost were, if you remember that bowl.
Yeah.
But right. I don't know. I just thought Kiffin might want to, just check out the bowl, check out the players. But, chances are it's going to be such a dramatically different roster.
Let me put another spin on it. How would you like, if you're an offensive guru, okay?
Yeah, right.
And that's your reputation, and that's you're a savant, offensive savant. How would you like to have to coach that offense?
Right.
In the Texas Bowl.
Yeah, and it would take a lot of game planning, and who knows, and it would be wasted time because he's geared toward the portal and recruiting.
Well, that not only that, I mean, if it was, let's say, if it was the situation where you had the between Jaden Daniels and Garrett Nussmeier, right, and you. The one reason why that bowl was so interesting when they played Wisconsin in that, what was that? Was that in Tampa, Orlando, one of those?
That was
Florida
the Texas
bowls.
Bowl. Wasn't it the Texas Bowl?
No, Wisconsin was in Florida.
Yeah, Wisconsin was in Florida. But the Garrett intrigue Nussmeier. About that the intrigue about that was it was a finally Garrett Nussmeier gets a chance to start, and it's a preview to what the next season will be.
Oh, right.
And here, we all know Michael Van Buren is not going to be the starting quarterback in 2026. So it's not even like he can – if Lane was hands-on with this team, it's not even like he's grooming his next quarterback. And I kind of agree with – it's just a weird situation all around.
You agree with Todd? Is that what you were about?
I 2025 is wrapping up here soon, and I'd figure out I'd finally agree with you this year, Todd.
Good. So let's put that on the shelf. Okay.
I'm going to make sure I cut that tonight.
Well, but, I mean, it's not like you're any different, Jeff. Who else agrees with Todd? I mean, I don't know anybody else that agrees with him.
I might agree with Todd here.
I don't know.
But I'm talking about the rest of 2025. I'm trying to think of anybody that agreed with him.
Yeah, like when I told y'all early on that if Brian Kelly didn't win, into the college football playoffs, he was going to get fired, and everybody laughed at me.
Well, you said he was going to get fired last year. So if you kept saying it year by year, one year you're going to be right.
I said last year he was going to get fired this year.
No, you said he was going to get fired last year.
Last year I said he was going to get fired this year.
Yeah, last year.
No, this year.
I disagree.
All right. Go ahead. I would have told you at halftime of the Texas A&M game, Brian Kelly would be fired. I don't know if you would have agreed with me.
Because I didn't think they were going to fire him that quickly.
Yeah.
I thought that was it. I thought that was his death nail. I did. Hey,
but they were leading at halftime is what Jeff was saying.
Oh, at halftime. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I got a question for you guys. You were talking about the $25 million that's guaranteed. 90 plus million here for Lane Kiffin. We don't know exactly yet how much all the assistant coaches are. The buyout, where is all this money coming from, guys?
It's obviously coming from, it's going to have to come from the donors. I mean, the LSU in the last, I think it was in the last issue of Tiger Rag, or maybe it was on tigerrag.com. I broke down that the Tiger Athletic Foundation, Scott Woodward, drained it. Of its funds, and they have a lot of long-term debt bond coming up, so they need an injection of cash to handle all this, and they don't seem worried about it, so they must obviously have commitments from their donors to get it. And in fact, I saw today where ticket sales were up 15%,
right? Yeah.
And also that donations were up significantly since Lane Kiffin had been hired.
And they decided not to raise ticket prices. You saw that? They drew that back.
Right.
It's interesting because the belief was LSU doesn't have the type of rich donors as A&M or some of the other schools, but it
Well, I don't think they have as much depth of donors as they do at A&M, but I think they have some pretty deep pockets with a handful.
But they're in.
It's kind of like the 2025 recruiting class for LSU football. Not a lot of recruits, but the ones they got are pretty good. Let's take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was the life for me. Home of the LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo along with Glenn Gilbo and Todd Horn. Before we get out of here tonight, our thoughts and prayers are with the Kevin Falk family. Back in 2021, he lost one of his daughters, an unexpected death, and it has happened again to another one of his daughters who died unexpectedly on Saturday. To have it happen once, but now to have it happen a second time, that is heartbreaking for something like that to happen. But
my goodness, what happened?
Well, apparently the Advocate is reporting that his 30-year-old daughter, Letitia, died unexpectedly Saturday at a hospital in Lafayette. Now, there's been no details on her death. Foul play is not suspected or anything like that. So, but if you remember, it was Tanisha Falk, Kevone Falk, who was actually a student worker for LSU's football program at the time, back in September of 2021. She died when she was 19. So now Letitia Falk, at the age of 30, has died. So, my goodness, that is just heartbreaking for the Falk family. So, wanted to say that we're certainly thinking about them, and that's just very sad, very, very sad stuff there. We wanted to get to the soundbite here before we got out of here. This was Frank Wilson when asked, I think you have it, Andre / Luke, I think you got it on Frank Wilson talking about whether he'll be still on the staff following the Texas Bowl. If you can play that soundbite, Andre.
We just want to finish what we've started with this football team, with the team of 2025. Give them our undivided attention before transition happens. And so until then, nothing will necessarily happen in that regard.
So that's a little bit of what Coach Wilson had to say today. But you guys feel... Am I right on this, Todd, that you feel like he still will be part of the staff?
You know what? I really don't know. Last week, based on what we had heard, I thought he would be. Right now, I can't say I'm as confident in that. But I will say this. If, for whatever reason, whether Kevin Smith from Ole Miss comes to coach the running backs and that blocks out Frank Wilson from the staff and Kiffin's plans, they need to get somebody in here who's got a pipeline to New Orleans.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest fear. They just don't want to see and I'm talking about they, LSU fans, don't want to see another Corey Raymond situation where you let an assistant go and – you lose your guy that brings in top-notch defensive backs. Here it would be to bring in the best of the best out of the New Orleans area.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, though, those kingpin recruiters, they're not quite as significant as they were pre-NIL, you know, because the relationships aren't as big. They're still big, though. And, you know, some New Orleans media I know, they're convinced that Frank is staying because of his connections, particularly with Edna Carr High and other major programs in New Orleans. And I don't think they have another guy on staff with any really New Orleans contacts. Who's the other one?
Well, I'm not saying it has New Orleans contacts, but I believe that, and we hadn't even talked about this at all, which is amazing to me, that when Kiffin retained Blake Baker over this weekend, I think that was a significant injection of Louisiana recruiting, because it, you know, Baker's got a great reputation and from recruit and knows the state. And like you said, Jeff, he retains Corey Raymond, who's very important, not just to the defensive backfield, but also to recruiting the state. So it's not as bad as when Brian Kelly came in here and eliminated everybody and had absolutely nothing other than Frank Wilson to rebuild that pipeline.
Well, that, you know, that was not really, I mean, they had had two 500 seasons. They needed a change. And I don't think Kelly was wrong in getting rid of everybody. It's that he didn't replace them with good people was the main problem.
Well, he did bring in Frank right away.
Yeah, that was a good move, you know, but there's a lot of coaches that were at LSU and other support personnel that it was time to go. But
so you agreed with the Corey?
No, Raymond not with Corey. I didn't agree with that part. But some of the other wholesale changes needed to happen. But if you're going to make changes, you got to make sure you bring in guys just as good or better. And that's what he didn't do. I think that was one of the main reasons he failed. This was a little later. He should have tried harder to keep Mike Denbrock and replaced him better when he lost him.
Austin Thomas gone, you guys think?
Yes. If he stays, it's not going to be the previous job he had, because Lane really likes Glasscock, who he has. And you know, it's funny, he's got that running back coach at Ole Miss that he hadn't brought over.
Kevin Smith.
Right, Kevin Smith. And yet he hasn't told Frank that you're staying. So it's like, it's like he hasn't done either one. So maybe he really just hasn't made up his mind.
All right. Lane Kiffin not making up his mind? We've heard it.
I think he doesn't have his answers yet. I think he's waiting. I think he prefers Kevin Smith as a running backs coach, and he doesn't have an answer from Kevin Smith yet.
Oh, maybe that's it. Right. Yeah,
that could be it. That's a good
and,
point.
And, you know, there's really not that much of a hurry. I mean, they got time to pick the right people.
Yeah, no, it's important stuff. All right, let's take a break. One more break to go, and then we'll wrap it up after this here from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
All right, time for our two-minute offense here on Tiger Rag Radios. We do have Glenn West from 247 Sports joining us here, and we literally got about three and a half minutes here with you, Glenn, so let's get right to it. How many quarterbacks does Lane Kiffin sign in the transfer portal class, do you think?
I think he signs 2. I think they aim for 3. I think they sign 2.
All right, so give me some names.
Okay. I think Sam Levette is a name that you should be keeping an eye on if you're LSU fans. You know, he's got a pretty long road to recovery from a Les Frank surgery, but he's one that we're hearing right now could be a possibility for LSU. Excuse me, come January 2nd, he's dealing with a little bit of a foot injury, but Sam Levette would be one. I'm a big fan of C.J. Bailey. I love the NC State quarterback, and if he enters the portal, I would certainly be making a call to him as well. Don't know how realistic that one is, but he fits all the, you know, the markers for, you know, a quarterback in a Lane Kiffin system with the mobility and certainly the passing ability as well.
What's going on with Colin Hurley?
Yeah, Hurley has left the program. He's been out for really over a month now. I don't expect him to be back. I would expect in the next several days to weeks, we hear that he has decided to enter the transfer portal. So really Michael Van Buren is the one guy that I think would come back to LSU if given that opportunity. So you could be very realistically be looking at two or three quarterbacks that LSU has to try to get out of the portal here in this next cycle.
All right. Is there any chance Lenore Sellers leaves South Carolina?
That's a very interesting name. I think he'd fit that system. He'd fit the Kiffin system really, really well. I haven't heard of any buzz of Sellers to LSU, but he's certainly somebody that I would be tracking if he does enter the portal. He's got a lot of talent and a lot of athletic ability.
Hey, Glenn. Hey,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Trinidad Chambliss, do you think they have a chance to get him if he does get his senior year back?
Oh, if he gets that extra waiver, and yes, I would absolutely think so. I think just from what I've been hearing and some of the conversations that I've had, you know, that waiver is still very much a coin toss right now if he actually does get it. But if he does get it, I mean, that just makes all the sense in the world if he gets that extra year to come here, play for another year under Kiffin, and really get some magic going here with the LSU offense. I think that makes a lot of sense.
LSU's offensive backfield next year is going to have Harlan Berry, Caden Durham, and Kewan Lacy of Ole Miss.
Yes, yeah, I think that would be the ideal scenario there. If Lacy was to enter the portal, he'd be somebody I'd be circling in red Sharpie and wanting to get back into the system, into that Lane Kiffin system. So yes, I would absolutely be going all in on Kewan Lacy if he's in there, and certainly some other options there at receiver that I think LSU could potentially get in the mix for as well.
Too many ifs. I'm asking you for real. No ifs. All right.
I'll get that crystal ball for you next week for sure, yeah.
Well, watch Trinidad and
I think they got an option.
Trinidad and Kewan are going to be on the plane back with those five coaches.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Very good point, Glenn. Yes. I owe y'all a couple segments next week. That's totally my fault.
Actually, this was our best segment of the show. I don't know what you're talking about.
It got off the rails. It's very short, quick answers, right? Yeah.
All right, till next week when we might have Glenn back on. We want to thank everyone for listening. Again, check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can check us out on YouTube. For Andre, Glenn, Gilbo, Todd Horn, I'm Jeff Palermo. This has been Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.